Jason Mazzoni from the University of Illinois. We've chatted about historical things in the past. Professor, you are not eligible for this question. You might know the answer to it. Thanks for joining the program today.
Hi, John. How are you?
I'm doing well, and we appreciate you jumping on here in the 1 o'clock hour. I wanted to chat with you about the Supreme Court in general and our confidence in the court system. And before we start, I just want to lay down the idea that I know a lot of people's opinions on the court can be based on how the court's rulings have been recently, right? There may be a partisan angle to why someone may not love the Supreme Court, but we're going to talk more about like the trust in the institution of it. That's a fair point to make before we start, right, Professor?
That's right. I mean, there are, you know, dips and peaks, I think, depending on what the court does at any particular time, and then people sort of recalibrate.
Right. So How is confidence in the Supreme Court right now? I've seen some polls here and there. What's your read on it?
It seems like it's gone down. So I think in the last year or two, for the first time, confidence in the Supreme Court or trust in the Supreme Court is the right thing. If you look at a variety of polls, dropped below 50% of the population survey for the first time since they've been doing those polls. So that it's gone down, but the court is still more popular than any other branch of the federal government. So it's all relative, you know. But it is lower than before. You know, people traditionally had higher confidence in the Supreme Court. Now, you know, whether it's going to go back up in the next year or two, we don't know.
Do you think Chief Justice John Roberts reads those polls and worries about them?
I suspect not. He may read them. I don't think he worries about them. I think his notion is probably that he has a job to do. The job is to decide the issues properly according to the law, and you don't want, you know, rioters taking over the Supreme Court. But so long as you don't get to that point, you should just sort of keep pushing ahead and doing what's right.
Well, then, does it worry you?
I think what worries me is a perception that the Supreme Court should just be thought of, and I think this is increasingly a perception that people have. It should be just thought of as kind of another branch of the government, another political branch. It worries me that people would lack confidence in the court because they think that the justices are just there voting as though they were members of an elected legislature, that they're not deciding issues based on legal considerations, based on deliberations, based on the party's briefs and so on. So I think that's the thing that worries me more than the sheer numbers.
You're a student of history, too, and you know a lot about this. And I think that when we are in these times, sometimes in the present, we go, this is the worst this has ever been, whether it's confidence in the Supreme Court or this is the most split we've ever been as a country. And people seem to forget there was a civil war where we literally were killing each other.
Right.
Is this the worst our confidence has ever been in the Supreme Court based on kind of your sense of how it's gone? Or have there always been kind of ups and downs in the country's confidence in our judicial system?
I think there's always been ups and downs. I think what we're seeing today is, as you suggested, are tracking what's happening elsewhere in terms of our confidence in other entities, other institutions of government, but also in our views towards each other. So if you look, you know, not at how people think about government or people who are serving in government, you just look at how they think about their fellow citizens. There's much more distrust, there's much more animosity. In the past, you know, we could disagree with people from a different political party. Today, people don't just say they disagree, they say they hate the other side. They think that they're enemies of the Republic and so on. So the dip in trust in the Supreme Court, I think, is part and parcel of what's happening more generally.
Is part of this because, and I know I said at the beginning we're taking a nonpartisan view on this, but is it partly because, whether you agree or disagree with where the court's going, that we're just in the middle of a stretch of kind of some consequential terms where we are seeing big issues like Dobbs being decided that are just going to naturally split people. And we could have a decision on the, how powerful state legislatures are in terms of general elections. Like, there's just a lot of big issues in front of the court right now in this limited amount of time that could be switches from previous decisions. You kind of understand what I'm asking? That the nature of the decisions of the court are contributing.
I think that's definitely right. So one thing is we have these big cases that involve issues that divide the country. So it doesn't matter how the court rules in one of those cases, half the country is going to be upset with the outcome. It didn't matter what the court did in Dobbs, you're going to have half the country angry because the court preserved Roe or angry because it overturned Roe. And so I think that that certainly is one factor. I think the other thing is that the court doesn't take that many cases anymore. And the ones that we hear about are the big divisive cases. Those are the ones that get all the attention. They come down in May or June, and we have a bunch coming up soon. Those are the ones that people focus on, and that becomes sort of representative of what it is that the court is doing. But remember, the court decides 70 or so cases per year. Many of those decisions are unanimous or 6-3 or 7-2 decisions. They're not divisive in the way that the big cases like Dobbs are divisive. And so we sort of were able to focus on the entire set of cases that the court decided. And if the court were to decide more cases so that it had sort of more material in which there were fewer 5-4 divisions, then I think we might think of the court a bit differently. But it's inevitable, I guess, that we focus on those big hot-button issues. And those cases, whatever the court does, is going to make somebody mad.
Clarence Thomas obviously is under fire for going on these lavish vacations with the top Republican donor. And, we don't have to get too into the weeds about all of it. I know we've hashed it out a lot on the station, but are there ways to provide a little bit more clarity or some sort of ethical standards that at least the court says, hey, here's some new rules we're going to follow to gain more confidence in this?
Yes, I don't know if you saw what happened just in the last couple of days. So Dick Durbin, who is, in addition to being our senator, is the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, wrote to Chief Justice Roberts, inviting him to appear before hearings next week that the Judiciary Committee is holding on ethics issues at the Supreme Court, really arising out of the incident you described involving Justice Thomas. Chief Justice Roberts sent Durbin a letter back saying, thank you very much, but I won't be coming to your hearing. And essentially said it would be kind of inappropriate for a Chief Justice to testify before a congressional committee. But he attached to that letter a statement that all of the justices had signed individually. And it's a kind of remarkable statement because the court itself is not bound by any ethical code in the way that lower federal courts are. But attached to this letter to Senator Durbin was a statement on ethics, principles, and practices signed by the individual justices, a little bit vague, but sort of setting out a commitment to recusal standards and reporting standards and financial disclosure standards, the kinds of things that got Justice Thomas into trouble. So, the incident did provoke a little additional clarity in terms of the considerations and the ethical considerations that the court is willing to follow. What I thought was most interesting about it was that it's framed as the nine of us, we each agree to be bound by these factors, these considerations. So they're agreeing individually to sign on to follow a set of ethical norms. Doing it voluntarily. Again, it's not a sort of code of conduct for the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court has not itself adopted it. This is just agreed to by nine individual justices. I think that tells you a lot about how the justices think of themselves and their autonomy and the work that they do.
Yeah, for sure. I wish we could dive deeper into this, Professor. We'll have to do it another time. Thanks for joining us today.
Oh, great fun. Anytime. Yeah. Thank you.